we are here at an auspicious moment. Beginnings are tremendous times. We're talking about what it means for us as God's people to not just deal with or survive or weather being uncomfortable, but to actually embrace it as a positive experience. We've got slides for this today, so I don't have a clicker. My clicker is Paul. He's my Vanna White for the day. If you understand that reference, you're at least my age or older. So we're talking about what it means for us to find God in the uncomfortable. And I sort of settled on this story from very early in my ministry. When I say very early in my ministry, I mean quite literally this was the beginning. The very first day that I was in the parsonage of my very first parish. Paul, if you would, please. I am in a house in rural West Virginia. When I say rural West Virginia, I mean we were an hour drive to our nearest grocery store. So I am in the small town of Arkansas, West Virginia, spelled with a W, because you don't say Arkansas or Kansas, so Arkansas with a W, West Virginia. You will rarely find that properly printed on a map, because map makers feel the need to correct our grammar. But here I am in this small house in Arkansas, West Virginia, hours from anyone I know, an hour from the nearest hospital, nearest grocery store, and I am in my home where my office is, first day, and I see an individual walking up my driveway, an older lady, and she has a walking stick with her, sort of like an old apostle might have taken a branch out of the woods, really. A walking stick is maybe a little generous. It was a branch out of the woods. And she is walking up my drive, a very long, steep drive. And as she's walking up, I notice that she is wearing a bright orange stocking cap that comes down below her waist, which is a fashion choice that I was not aware that a person would make. And especially because it was a warm day. And she comes up to my house, and I think, this is my first opportunity to meet one of my parishioners. I am so excited. God is going to do really great things with it here in this place. I am so, and I go out to greet her. And she stops in my driveway as I come out to greet her, and I say, hello, I'm Pastor Russ, I'm your new pastor. It's so nice to meet you. Are you a member at First Lutheran? And she says, you're the new guy. Yes, yes, ma'am, I am the new guy. And she looks at me long and hard, and she goes, you won't last. None of them ever last. And she turns around and walks away. And this is when I realized that the orange stocking cap on her is actually a pant leg that she's cut off and put on her head. Her name was Thelma. I got to know Thelma quite well over the next couple of years. But that was my introduction to ministry. Welcome to Arkansas, West Virginia. You won't last. None of them ever last. And then she left. And then I was there for 3 years. So I lasted for a little bit. But I guess, you know, having experienced that as my first moment of ministry, you know, there is a degree to which you kind of question, what have I gotten myself into? What exactly lifestyle-wise have I chosen for myself? And as Christians, I think sometimes when we face those tremendously uncomfortable moments where we question our decisions, our places in life, or maybe we're having events surrounding us that are causing us deep uncomfortability, we wonder, where is God in all the midst of this? And I want to spend the next few weeks suggesting the possibility that maybe when we find ourselves in some uncomfortable moments, this doesn't mean all of them, but sometimes God is calling us into uncomfortability. Sometimes God is specifically calling us from the place of comfort that we want to be in to an intentional place of uncomfortability. Now, when I was in high school and as a young college student, and it kept up for a good long while, there was this What Would Jesus Do movement. Do you remember WWJD, What Would Jesus Do? We had bracelets with it on. We had necklaces. You go to the Christian bookstore, everything was What Would Jesus Do themed. And I have to say, I was never a huge fan of the whole thing. I was never a huge fan of the question, what would Jesus do? Because I felt like it was too easy to divorce the question, what would Jesus do, from the answer. Because as soon as we start asking the question, I'm dealing with this challenge in my life, what would Jesus do? We automatically put ourselves in the place of Jesus. That's a dangerous thing to do. Because I don't think like Jesus thought. I want to, but I don't. I'm very human. I don't think sinlessly like Jesus thought sinlessly. I don't have an infinite wellspring of wisdom like Jesus had an infinite wellspring of wisdom. As soon as we as Christians begin asking, what would Jesus do? We're already beginning to say, what do I want to do that I might justify based on what I think I can say Jesus would do? It's real easy to start justifying anything we want to say if we start to apply that what would Jesus do in the wrong way. Every so often I'll hear somebody say something very much like, well, the God I believe in would never do this. Or the God I believe in, he absolutely accepts that. Or he never accepts that. I get real nervous when people say that because I'm not quite sure they're talking about the same God as me. Because I don't have a God I believe in, I have a God who is, that I'm doing my best to understand that I believe in him wholly and completely, but it's not my job to say, this is what I think God should think. Paul, if you would, please. You see, as Christians, our job isn't to ask, what would Jesus do? Our job is to ask, what has God done? Our job is to not say, what might God do, but what has God done? What has God demonstrated as his will? What is God demonstrating in his scripture is his truth. So if we want to think about something complicated, like how do we deal with life when God has called us into an uncomfortable moment, it's important to ask, historically speaking, what has God done with his people? Which is why I chose three stories. I mentioned to you that these are all calling stories, sending stories. These are times in which God has sent his people from one place, a place of comfort, into an uncomfortable place where they're going to suffer and have difficulty, and what it is that God does with them. And I wanted to start with this Genesis story. I wanted to start with the story of the sending of Abram from Haran, which is an Ur of Chaldea. Let's talk about what it means for Abram to be sent in this fashion. Because if you hear it on the surface of it, it sounds like a really good change for him. This is a vertical move in the corporate world. He is moving up in the world. God has said to Abram, I'm going to call you out of the land you are in, and I'm going to send you to a place where your children will go from generation to generation, and they will be blessed, and all who bless them will be blessed, and all who curse them will be cursed. And that sounds like a really great thing. But, Paul, if you would, here's the thing. God takes Abram from Ur of Chaldea. By the way, scholars aren't like 100% certain on exactly where Ur of Chaldea is, but we know it was in Sumeria. We know it was in the part of the world called the Fertile Crescent. The Fertile Crescent is a place where crops grow easily, life is comfortable. Ur itself and Haran was a very wealthy portion of the country. It was a big, large urban area. So God takes this person who's lived their lives in this very comfortable, beautiful, green, urban, comfortable location. And God says, I'm going to send you and your children, he's taking Lot with him, out into this place where I'm going to give you this new kingdom. And he takes them from this green urban place and he walks them first to the land of the Canaanites, which, if you know anything about the Canaanites and the Philistines, it's going to be very, very uncomfortable. These are vicious people. These are dangerous people. These are folks whose religious practices involve lots of human sacrifice. These are folks who are not going to be welcoming. And what's more, it's not the beautiful green of Ur of Chaldea. This is not Haran. This is somewhere where they're going to have to struggle for survival. And God says, I'm going to give this to your children. And I love what happens next in this passage. God says, this is going to go to your children. And Abram's like, this is awesome. And God's like, we're not stopping here, though. God's like, this is going to be yours. Or sort of. But not yours. Just keep moving. And God moves them on into the Negev. The Negev is the desert. The Negev is hot, dry, rocky. About the only place in America that we have that's roughly equivalent to the Negev is the Badlands in the Dakotas. It is a place where you're going to be hanging on to life by your fingernails. So why does God send Abram from this comfortable place with everything you'd want to this incredibly uncomfortable place with nothing that you would want? Why would God do that to one of his beloved? Well, the answer is because in Samaria, in Haran, in Ur of Chaldea, it was a place with false gods. It was a place whose religion pervaded everything in the world, and they were surrounded at all times by false idols. And God called Abram out of that place because he did not want them surrounded by false gods and false idols. And you might say, well, of course God wouldn't want that. That sounds like an awful place to be. Yeah, okay. Because, you know, God doesn't like it when his people are, you know, being tempted to worship other gods. But it goes deeper than that. You see, when Israel is commanded to avoid false gods, false idols, it's not because God is just a jealous God who doesn't like it when his people are around other gods. He's not like, well, I'm just kind of uncomfortable with my people, you know, rubbing shoulders with that kind of people. It's because God understands that false gods means false truths. False idols means false truth. That Abram was living in a land in which the truth of God was not the truth that he was living within. He was surrounded by false truth. And when we live surrounded by false truth, it is easy to confuse what is and is not true. Because God knows what is and is not true. He takes Abram from this place where the religion pervades everything around him. False gods are a part of all of society and culture that he is around. And he takes them out of this place of false truth and he moves them to where they may have time with God and God alone. A place where God's truth is the only truth that is around Abram. There is no such thing as a multiplicity of truths. There is only God's truth. Everything else is a false truth. So, it was time to uproot from Ur. It was a time to go and be a part of a new truth. Now, it wasn't easy. It was deeply uncomfortable. And as we go through this next few weeks and talking about, you may discover that as you are examining your life, you might discover that you are living in a place, maybe in a relationship, a job, a situation, a mindset, a friend group, I don't know, where truth that is God's truth is not the truth you're surrounded by. You may feel God uncomfortably calling you to uproot yourself from that place where you are and follow him to do something different, to be in a different setting. And it's a frightening thing when God calls you to do that, because you never know when a crazy person is going to walk up your driveway and say, "You won't last. None of them ever last." And you think to yourself, "Why did I come this place?" But it's important to remember that God was with Abram. Every step of the way, God walked with Abram. And God has always walked with his people. If we move to the New Testament lesson from Acts, we've got the disciples there in prison. That's an uncomfortable place, right? And God comes and he moves among, and his angel opens the doors up and he sets the apostles free. And they're out of that uncomfortable prison place. And God could have said, "Now get out of Dodge. Go run, go hide, go find yourself a rock to hide under. Go somewhere safe." But what does God do? He sends them. Remember, this is a sending story, into the temple, the place where their enemies are in charge to proclaim the gospel message, and they have to stand in the midst of opposition. Why does God call them to stand in the midst of opposition? This uncomfortable, awful moment? Because God is teaching the apostles that when you stand on God's truth, when you stand on the foundation of the gospel, that is the only comfort that we can count on in this world. That we are called to stand on this truth in this moment. If all of the world comes against us and we don't find our comfort in other people's opinions of us, we don't find our comfort in other people's approval of us. We find our comfort in knowing that we're speaking the gospel of Jesus Christ and we're speaking the truth in the world that needs to hear the truth, even if they don't want to hear the truth. And it's important to remember that when you're standing on the truth of God, God is going to pour into your life love. God is going to pour into your life peace. God is going to pour into your life joy. God is going to pour these things into your life when you're standing on his truth, even in, especially in the midst of opposition. And let me tell you what, if you're standing on the truth of the gospel of Jesus Christ, there are certain things that won't be a part of your life. You know, when they're there in the temple and they're preaching and they're proclaiming, and the Sadducees discover that they're in the temple and they send their guards to go and get them, and the guards do, in fact, go and get them, do the apostles thumb their noses at the guards and go, "Nah, nah, 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 you can't catch us"? Do they point to the guards and go, "God set us free from the prison last night. He'll set us free from the prison tonight. You're not God's favorite. We are, nah, 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 nah." No. You see, when we're standing on the truth of God, we're surrounded by God's love, his peace, but we're not surrounded by arrogance. We're not surrounded by obnoxiousness. We're not surrounded by ego. When we're standing on God's peace, we're filled with grace. So what do the disciples do when the guards come back? They shrug their shoulders and go, "Okay, well, this is what comes next. Let's go." And they go and they continue to stand firm on God's truth. So here, as we're talking about what it means to be God's people facing uncomfortability, there will be moments in your life where you are going to be uncomfortable because you're going to have to speak up for the truth of God in the midst of opposition, because God will call you to do that. And when you do stand on that foundation of truth, God will pour into your life peace. He will pour into your life joy and hope and grace and mercy. He won't pour in obnoxiousness or arrogance, because that's not of God. But sometimes he sends us to be in the midst of opposition because it teaches us to stand on one thing and one thing only, and that's God's truth. When we do these things, we come to that gospel passage. Paul, if you would. And that is Jesus sending his disciples out. He's sending them out. He's sending them out without provision. He's sending them out without money, without tools, without anything that any reasonable person would pack for a trip. Because he wants them to understand reliance, dependence. That if we who are placed by God in the midst of an uncomfortable situation, if we could take care of it ourselves, if we've got this, and I mean, I don't know how often I talk to people, and I am a huge, huge guilty party here, because I do this all the time, where we're like, no, I got this handled, I can do it myself. I got this handled. If we're relying on ourselves in the midst of that uncomfortability, first of all, we're going to fail eventually. We may not fail the first time, the second time, or the 55th time, but we're going to fail eventually, and we're going to fail horribly. And second of all, we're not going to grow one step closer to God. It's not going to bring us any deeper. It's not going to take us any further. We must be people that find ourselves rooted solely and completely in dependence on the divine. Because it's the only thing in life that truly is 100% believable, reliable, and true. As we go through talking about what it means to find God in the uncomfortable, we're going to be talking about how we grow on this uneasy path. And it comes down to understanding those three things. How we allow God to remove us from comfortable situations that neither honor nor worship God. How we allow God to be the foundation upon which we stand when everything else around us moves and shifts and changes and pushes back with all of its might. And finally, how we sink our roots into dependence on God, knowing that in that and that alone, we can trust wholly and completely. Paul, if you would, please. Over the next few weeks, we're going to be talking about why is this discomfort essential? What's the spiritual benefit to being uncomfortable in those situations? We're going to talk about how we identify areas of uncomfortable growth, because every last one of us has an area of uncomfortable growth in our life, and I know for a fact that every last one of us has an area of uncomfortable growth, because it's the last thing we want to talk about. It's that one thing that we would rather talk about everything else in the world, especially other people's areas of uncomfortable growth. We don't want to talk about ours, and we all have one. It'd be impossible for us not to unless you are yourself Jesus Christ. In which case, I'm going to cancel this sermon series because Christ has come again, and clearly we've reached the end of time. We're going to talk about practical tools for navigating discomfort. What can we as Christians do in our life to embrace and enhance what God is doing? How do we interact with the Holy Spirit? What tools do we have to do this with? And then on the last week, we're going to talk about embracing the stretch. And I know that we've done this before, and everybody's looked at it, and we've checkmarked off things, went, yeah, okay. But you know what? We're going to go ahead, and we're going to do time and talent sheets again. And I really want you guys to think about embracing what it is that God might be stretching you to do this coming year. As those time and talent sheets come around and we talk about stewardship, really spend some time considering how God might be calling you from your point of comfort to come and do some ministry that you're not ready to do, that you're ill-prepared to do, and that you may actually feel really uncomfortable about doing, whether it's in your personal life, somebody that you need to talk to about God, whether it's in your church life, some ministry you need to take part in. Really think about that as we talk about embracing the stretch, and we pass around that. And of course, we're gonna be taking, Mother's Day is a separate day within the season. We're not going to be talking about the sermon series on Mother's Day. Lots of people have pointed out to me that being a mother is an inherently uncomfortable thing. If you've ever given birth, which I have not, I am told and I have seen firsthand, it is massively uncomfortable. But beyond that, being a mother involves a lot of moments of being uncomfortable, even reflecting on and thinking about motherhood. For many of us includes a lot of uncomfortable elements. So even though this isn't part of the sermon series next Sunday on Mother's Day, unquestionably we'll be getting into uncomfortable territory. But with all that, I hope that you all spend some time with me over the next few weeks. With that sermon, with that study guide that I printed for you all, really thinking about how God might be calling you to set aside life's fundamental drive to be comfortable, to embrace heaven's fundamental call, to be sent into the uncomfortable in order that we might grow, change, come closer to God, and become more than we are. Thank you all, and amen.